at LifeLock.com.
Welcome to Midpoint. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. Today, we're going to continue our discussion on gun violence and gun safety. We're going to take your questions. The number to call in is 813-239-9663. We had a really vibrant discussion about guns last Monday. So if you didn't get a chance to weigh in or you'd like to make a different point, give us a call, 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0881 first. Before we go to our guests, I just want to quickly reiterate the story that we just heard on the NPR headlines, that Republican Governor Ron DeSantis chose a second Miami appeals judge for a seat on the Florida Supreme Court. And that's continuing to move the state's highest court in the more conservative direction. DeSantis announced today that Robert Luck is his latest choice. Luck is 39 years old. He's a former Miami federal prosecutor and circuit court judge. He most recently served on the 3rd District Court of Appeal. Last week, DeSantis picked another judge on that court, Barbara Lagoa, for the Supreme Court. And there's one more pick that DeSantis will be able to make before he fills out the Florida Supreme Court because of 3 retiring justices or justices who have just retired. All right, well, now back to our discussion. Both of our guests today are volunteers with the group Moms Demand Action. Welcome to WMNF's Midpoint, Erin Wiley and Melissa Ransdell.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, let's start with Erin. Tell us, what is Moms Demand Action?
So Moms Demand Action is a gun violence prevention organization. We are the grassroots volunteer army that is underneath the umbrella of Everytown for Gun Safety. So we are mothers and others, and we work towards ending gun violence, mostly legislatively. And so we'll be doing some legislative work coming up with Advocacy Day in February. I think we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But we meet monthly, and we work in a variety of ways to do what we can to protect our kids and communities.
And Erin, I want to ask you a personal question. What is it personally that made you get involved in Moms Demand Action in gun legislation?
Well, I am a mother of 3, and my kids have grown up in a generation where they've never known going to school without having to do these lockdown drills. And so definitely there's a sense of wanting to protect them and keep them safe that drives me. I'm also a survivor of gun violence myself. I've been threatened with a gun at my head when I was 9 months pregnant before one of my cousins was unintentionally shot when we were children and has been paralyzed ever since. So gun violence has always been something that has had an impact on my life since I was a young child, and I've always wanted to work to do something to prevent it as much as I could. And when I found Moms, I knew I was in the right place.
And Melissa, you are a gun owner.
I am.
And you are a Republican.
Correct.
What else about your story should people know about why you got involved in Moms Demand Action?
For me, it was the Parkland massacre. That's when I decided to kind of get off the sidelines and do something. I did the march for March for Our Lives that was in here in Tampa with about 15,000 fellow people, and was really struck by the cause. I mean, you don't have to be a mom to appreciate what that community went through and to be deeply affected by gun violence in this country. It's a problem, and we need to look at ways to fix it. So I was, really drawn into it at that point, wanted to do more, and found Moms Demand Action. I've been impressed with how it's very factual. It's not just a bunch of people that are, kind of loose out there running around trying to stop gun violence. They look at it very methodically and logically and kind of handle it that way. And that attracted me.
The number to call in is 813-239-9663. If you'd like to join this conversation, you can also send us a text at 813-433-0885. And you can email us, dj@wmnf.org. Our guests are Erin Wiley and Melissa Ransdell from Moms Demand Action. Your group is traveling to Tallahassee in the next few weeks in order to lobby legislators and to gather and make the point about gun safety. So what are some of the things that you'll be talking to legislators about?
Well, we'll be heading up to Tallahassee on February 6th, And just want to throw it out there that we do have free transportation, not only from Tampa, but from several other points in the state. So wherever you're listening from, there are several buses we'll be going up together. And as Melissa noted, everything we do is evidence-based. So we have legislative leads across the state that have been looking at the bills that are upcoming, and we will be separating into groups and speaking to our specific legislators. We're not just going up there willy-nilly and saying, hey, everybody listen. I will be speaking to my lawmakers, Melissa will be speaking to hers, and so on. And we'll be talking about everything that's upcoming. Specifically, one of the big things is background checks on all gun sales. And this is something that I think Melissa was pointing out to me earlier today, that so many people agree on.
Absolutely. It's a nonpartisan issue. It's, you know, Democrats, Republicans, the level of support is over 90% in this country nationwide. So, you know, you think something like that should pass as a no-brainer, but we're going to go up there and make sure they understand how their constituents feel, and very excited to do that. This will be my first time.
We might get a call today. Excuse me. We might get a call that says, well, you know, why should we pass universal background checks? Because if someone's a criminal, they won't bother going through the background check, and they'll get a gun anyway. If they're a criminal, they'll break the law to get a gun. How would you respond to that?
Well, the last background check bill that was passed was 25 years ago. That was the Brady bill. And since that time, I think it's the numbers, 3.5 million illegal gun sales have been stopped since then. So clearly they do work. And there's research out there that shows in states that enact you know, more stringent background checks, the level of homicides and gun suicides and all those numbers start to go down. So it's a background check is the foundation for common sense gun laws. And, you know, we're not trying to take anyone's guns away. We support the Second Amendment. We support the average responsible gun owner. But there are people out there trying to buy guns that would be stopped by a background check.
I want to know your thoughts about guns and what sensible legislation we could pass to make guns and our society more safe. The number is 813-239-9663. You're listening to Midpoint on WMNF Tampa 88.5 FM. It's 12:13 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. Our guests are Aaron Wiley and Melissa Ransdell from Moms Demand Action. Give us a call, 813-239-9663. On the subject of background checks, we got a caller last week who said, you know, look, if I wanted to just sell my gun to this person I met at a bus stop, I could do that without having a background check. And that's sometimes called the gun show loophole. It's not a great name because, you know, it's that there is no loophole that only applies to gun shows. It's just essentially between private sellers. When you go through a dealer, you have to have a background check, but some people don't go through dealers. They do private sales. How would that be implemented where you would catch more of the sales? Like in your case, you're talking about universal background checks. Mm-hmm. What would the legislation look like that would catch all transactions, even between a father and a son, let's say?
Well, it would require all of these gun sales to have these background checks. So they would have to go to a licensed gun dealer to make that a legal transaction. Otherwise, they'd be breaking the law. Mm-hmm. One thing that Melissa was just talking about with, you know, it's been 25 years since we've had a background check law. It is time to update it. What hasn't changed in 25 years? And as you mentioned, Sean, it's not just gun shows. It's the internet. It's, you know, people having transactions on the street. And one thing that most reasonable people agree on is that background checks, you know, there is plenty of research that show they do save lives. And so I don't see why anybody would want to argue against this, honestly. I don't know specifically how they will implement it, but I know that they're saying that every sale, you would have to go to a licensed gun dealer and have them run the background check. That's part of that.
As a gun owner, would you feel okay with that?
Oh, absolutely. I think most responsible gun owners would be okay with that. That's why we have numbers over 90% supporting this.
This discussion brings to mind a story we learned about last year when Agriculture and Consumer Services Secretary Adam Putnam's office, his office, it was found that over the last few years had let lots of people get these concealed carry permits. Now we're talking about something slightly different, but it's still a check. There's background checks involved. They were approved, and then later some of them were rescinded because of faulty staff work.
Right.
How can you avoid having something like that happen where it's just maybe sloppy management?
It was very negligent of that office to allow those background checks to, or for them not to have gone through, and for the amount of time that it did. Who knows who was granted a concealed carry license in that time that ought not to have been allowed by the law. Of course, sloppy management is one way you could put it, and we'll never cover every single base. There will always be people that, you know, mess up here or there. I think it was negligent, and I don't think that they were paying attention to it. I'm really so glad and thankful that we have Nikki Fried, a gun sense candidate, as our agricultural commissioner now overseeing that process. We have assurances from her that the same thing is not going to happen on her watch. And something that Moms Demand Action does is not only work to elect those that will help us with the fight to end gun violence, we also hold them accountable. So as much as we like somebody and might try to get them, you know, elected, we will also be following up with them and holding their feet to the fire and making sure that they do what they said they were going to do.
Nikki Fried, the newly elected agriculture commissioner in the state of Florida. She's a Democrat, the only Democrat on the in the cabinet. What does that mean, a gun sense candidate?
Well, Moms Demand Action gave out gun sense candidate distinctions to candidates that had to answer, kind of go through a survey and let us know what their views were on several points. We were actually not privy to seeing those surveys. They were just for the candidates. And if they met the criteria, they were given the approval to say, you are the kind of candidate that Moms Demand Action would like to stand behind. And so there were several of them locally across the state and across the country, hundreds, in fact. And Moms Demand Action members across the U.S. were supporting a number of gun sense candidates. So we were really thrilled that we had somebody like Nikki Fried, who we were able to help get elected, and we know is going to work in the best interest of our children and communities.
And what about the idea of switching this permitting process from the Department of Agriculture to a law enforcement agency like FDLE? Do either of you have thoughts about that?
Well, the organization is kind of coming together and making the decision on where we're going to stand on that. Personally, as a person, Moms Demand Action aside, I think that it would be a great idea for law enforcement to take over background checks.
It makes sense.
It just seems to make sense to me. The organization will come together and make the decision on that. And again, it'll be evidence-based. So we'll, you know, kind of look with that and go with their recommendations.
That's Erin Wiley with Moms Demand Action. We also have Melissa Ransdell. And you're listening to Midpoint on WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. It's 12:19 in the afternoon. And I have a question that I'm going to address to Melissa. It comes from one of our emailers. We'll say it's from Joellen. She says, in one of my previous jobs, I had to frequently deal with the fallout from gun violence. Often the financial hardship is not talked about, with victims often bearing the costs. Just as with cars, I would like to see gun owners required to carry valid and up-to-date insurance. All right, so that's a question from Joellen. I'm going to put that to Melissa, since you are a gun owner, and that would mean a financial burden on gun owners. What are your thoughts about gun insurance?
That's a good question. I support, I understand the cost of gun violence. You're right that the people who are affected by it, who are injured by it, will pay for it for the rest of their lives, as will their insurance companies. So I do appreciate that. I guess I haven't thought that far into it, I would be interested in hearing more about it. So I do think that some of the cost of this should go back on the gun companies, just like cigarette companies are now responsible for some of the health issues of cigarette smokers. You know, guns are for the gun manufacturers. So there should be some liability and some responsibility on their part as well. I would be interested in, you know, learning more about those options too.
And those kind of ideas are some of the things that we like to talk about at our meetings. We like to hear from people that have these interesting ideas. We take them, we, you know, bring them all together. We send them up. We say, hey, what do you think about this? And if there's evidence to back up the fact that it could be helpful, then Moms Demand Action will typically get behind certain things, especially, you know, legislatively. But again, there has to be evidence that it's going to be useful. But, I mean, that's definitely something we could discuss, you know, at our meeting on Wednesday at the West Tampa Library.
What time?
6 p.m. We would love to have everybody with us, whether you've been involved with Moms Demand Action before or not. Please come and join us. And you can hear a little bit more about Advocacy Day, what Moms does, and share some of your ideas like Joellen had there.
813-239-9663 is the number to call in if you'd like to talk to Moms Demand Action. We have Aaron and Melissa with us. My name is Sean. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. You can also email dj@wmnf.org, text 813-433-0885, or give us a call, 813-239-9663. If you have some solutions about what we can do to make the community safer, and what your thoughts are about guns and gun ownership and gun laws, 813-239-9663. So here are some of the legislative the bills that failed in last year's legislative session, and I want to talk about what your thoughts are with these. Last year in the Florida legislature, a bill prohibiting the sale or possession, that is, of assault weapons, that failed. That was, if I'm not mistaken, that was maybe going to be part of the Parkland bill. I hope I'm getting this right. And then it was taken out separately and passed, or, you know, tried to pass. The ban was tried, was its own bill for a second for there, and that failed. I'm guessing you would have supported that bill, but it failed.
That's right. And there were a lot of different versions of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Act before it went through. So there were a number of bills that we supported and acted against last year. And we see them, some of them coming up again. You know, that's going to happen. The campus carry, they're going to try and bring guns back onto school campuses and things like this. And we will oppose them again. And I think that one thing Tallahassee is learning is that we're not going away, and we're just getting stronger. Our movement is growing by the day. You know, we have over 4 million supporters across the country, and the Florida chapter of Moms Demand Action actually happens to be the largest in the country. Not Texas, not California, right here in Florida. So when those things do come up and we're ready to support it, we will put the full weight of Moms Demand Action, all of our volunteers behind it, and when we have to oppose them as well.
I think, as I recall, too, about the assault weapons at the state level here in Florida, it was really just a vote to discuss it that was turned down. Mm-hmm. And that was unfortunate, because we really do need to have these conversations, you know, however you feel about it. We need to talk about this issue. And without being able to do that, you know, we're not going to get really any place where we're all going to be, you know, in a good place about this. So I was really disappointed just to see that we couldn't even discuss it at the legislative level.
And we may get a caller who says something to the effect of, because, you know, we've had these conversations before, and so I can anticipate some of this. They'll say, well, there's no real definition of what an assault weapon is. And I think, you know, while that might be true, I think that that kind of conversation is where you get to definitions. And
absolutely,
you can talk about rounds,
right,
per minute, number of the capacity of ammunition, mm-hmm, in the magazine and so forth, how rapidly they fire and so forth.
Right. High capacity magazines were something that Moms Demand Action was against before there was any even talk about assault weapon, or there may have been talk about assault weapons bans, but it wasn't something that we were supporting. And it was because the definition was so loose. But we could agree that there was research to show us that high capacity magazines could be dangerous.
813-239-9663 if you'd like to join this conversation. Briefly, Well, let me play this soundbite because we, you know, you talked about campus carry, and this bill will come up again in the Florida legislature. So let me read about the sponsor of the bill. In a move that could refuel a long-running debate, legislation has once again been proposed that would allow people with concealed weapons licenses to carry guns on college and university campuses. So I do want to hear from you what your thoughts are about this. 813-239-9663. Freshman Republican Representative Anthony Sabatini is sponsoring the bill for consideration during the 2019 legislative session, which starts on March 5th. Under current law, people are barred from carrying guns on college and university campuses. But Sabatini says that law makes no sense. Here he is.
If you take responsible people and allow them to exercise the Second Amendment for their own self-defense, that you're going to find that you can make public places a little bit safer. And you just have to get past the rhetoric about guns being scary.
Gun rights supporters have lobbied the legislature in the past to end the prohibition for people with concealed weapons licenses, but the proposals have died year after year amid heavy opposition from many higher education officials and other opponents of the idea. So this is something that comes up almost every single year in the legislative session. The Florida State University's president, John Thrasher, I believe his first name is John, comes every year to the legislature and testifies that he does not think that people with concealed carry permits should be able to carry weapons onto Florida State University, and other, you know, universities and colleges also send their presidents as well. Yet this comes up year after year, and it's going to come up this year, as we just heard from the sponsor. You're opposed to campus carry.
Absolutely.
Why?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, guns have no place on any school campus. But there's several reasons that you would want to keep guns off of campus. But often you hear people say, well, you know, the good guy with the gun can stop something bad from happening, when we in fact know that civilians sometimes are misidentified as law enforcement by law enforcement in those situations and get injured themselves. There's so many things that could happen. I don't think it's worth the risk to the students and faculty on campuses.
I'm the mother of college-age kids. So I think, you know, if you've been on a college campus lately, even back in my day when I was on a college campus, I think many people would say that mixing college kids and guns carrying them on the campus is not a good idea. And I appreciate President Thrasher's strong views on this. He makes it very clear how he stands and did when he was in the legislature. I believe he was a senator, a Florida State senator, before he was president of FSU. So I strongly support that. And, you know, that age range is very prone to, they see higher levels of gun violence, just that age bracket. Like, I think it's 18 to 23, maybe 24. But, you know, it just doesn't make sense. Like Aaron mentioned, there's confusion in a situation like that. Introducing more guns is not the answer.
So far, we've talked a lot about homicides, but also suicides, that wherever there are guns, you're going to have a higher opportunity for suicides. And I'm, you know, I don't have the statistics in front of me to back this up, but my understanding and from what I've read is that college campuses are a place where, you know, you have a lot of people who are going through a lot of changes and a lot of questioning, and often there's, you know, there's a potential there for people who have access to weapons to die by suicide. And so that's another one of the reasons I've heard for people opposing having guns on college campuses.
Absolutely. In that age range, impulsivity, you know, kind of reigns supreme. Quite often there's, you know, a lot of drinking, and then throw in, you know, people that are struggling with any kind of mental illness. And it could be dangerous when it comes to suicide as well.
College is very stressful, as we all remember. So, you know, adding a gun into that mix, it's a dangerous situation.
Going back to last year's legislative session, well, actually, I'm going to introduce everyone again because it's been a couple of minutes. So you just heard from Melissa Ransdell and Aaron Wiley. They're with Moms Demand Action. And I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. It's 12:30 in the afternoon, and we'd like you to participate in this conversation. We have a couple of people on the line right now, and we're going to go to the phones in just a minute. I want to give out the number, 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. So what I was going to say is that another bill from last year's legislative session was a bill that would have allowed people with concealed weapons licenses to carry guns at churches and religious institutions that share property with schools. Mm-hmm. That bill failed. Your thoughts about that bill?
It failed because we fought it in part. That's very similar to guns on campus. You know, it's because they have a religious institution, should they be allowed to carry guns within that place? And I mean, it takes me back to the shooting at the church where one of the men tried to stop the shooter and then the police shot him. And why would you want to put yourself in those situations? It doesn't seem to make sense to me. I think that it's important that we keep guns off campus, even if they have a religious institution. That shouldn't change the way things are. There's no place for guns on a school campus at all.
Before we leave the guns on school campus issue, we have a couple of callers who want to talk about that. So let's start with Chris in Clearwater. Hi, Chris. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, I would like to talk about guns on campus, but just to first make the point, question is, why aren't the assassins of big high-profile cases like JFK, RFK, MLK Jr. cited as poster children for gun control?
I think what you mean is that if fewer people had access to guns, or if it was more difficult to get access to guns, then there would be fewer assassinations?
Well, the question is, why aren't they used as poster children? Because I've never seen them as posters, you know, like citing these high-profile cases. And I would say that the answer is because now it's common knowledge that those alleged assassins are falsely accused. The true assassins are known to be government itself. So there are so many examples like this that support the need for the citizenry to be better armed and the government to be less armed, that we need to look at, and that opens the question for cases like Parkland, and I'm about to post on bulletin board WFM.
All right, hang on. So I'm sorry. I'm not going to let you do one of those. I'm not going to let you use these airwaves to talk about that Parkland was a hoax as well. So that's nonsense. I'm not going to let you do that. I hate to cut you off, Chris, but no. All right, 813-239-9663. We've had lots of shows with people who are a lot smarter than me about topics about the JFK assassination. Rob does lots of the shows about that. Call in during those shows. That'd be great. All right, Andrew in Hardy County, welcome to Midpoint. What would you like to talk about?
Thanks, Sean, and thanks for keeping WMNF the greatest little radio station on planet Earth. And my thanks to the moms. I got to meet some of those great ladies from Tampa when they came over to Lakeland to support March for Our Lives. And I want to go a little farther into the question of education and firearms. And the point that I want to make is that colleges, maybe to a lesser extent, but universities in particular, are by design and intent centers of controversy. That is one of the things. Free thought and free expression is a big part of what university centers are about. Therefore, you're always going to have contention by intent, by design. You're always going to have people who are passionate about what they're talking about. It's not just young kids that guns don't mix with. It's high emotions, okay? People who are strongly committed. I mean, just think about the Stokes trial, okay? Just think about some of the ridiculous things that we've had to fight our way through in terms of ideology versus science in the last 100 years in this country, and then think, do we really need to add guns to that? No, we don't. We want our universities to be places of intense and heated controversy because that's how the best thinking happens. All right, when people can go head to head with their thoughts and their best thinking, that's when we get the most creative process going, and that is when we get the best thought process. All right, that's the critical dialectic. And to talk about putting deadly weapons in that environment is essentially a way of saying, let's just have a lot of fear and a lot of adrenaline and stop thinking. Let's stop the intellectual process. Let's stop human creativity. And let's have everybody walking around wondering who's packing today on a university campus. That is the opposite of the purpose of universities. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, Andrew, thanks so much for that call. We appreciate it. So, so Melissa, what are your thoughts about that additional reason maybe for opposing having guns on campus?
Well, you know, college campuses are a place of thought, and they absolutely should be. And for different opinions and for kids to search and find their opinions and hear different ideas. So, you know, I support that. But then things like Charlottesville, you know, that was the UVA near there where that happened. And, you know, you're right in that when emotions are high, guns are, you know, a problem at that point. But
I also agree, too, that students shouldn't have to walk around wondering who is packing. They shouldn't have to be afraid to be at school.
All right, thanks for that call, and thanks for those responses. 813-239-9663. You can email dj at wmnf.org. I'm going to get caught up in emails in just a second. You can text 813-433-0885. Again, you can phone us at 813-239-9663. What do you think about Florida's gun laws or the gun laws in the United States? Give us a call, 813-239-9663. Adam writes, there's something easy that we could start with. Every gun purchase should require a license and insurance. There's a reason you have to have those things when you drive an auto because it's dangerous. There's no reason the same paperwork should not apply to a gun. No one gets their gun taken away. So Adam, again, with the gun insurance and with the gun license. So this would be, to use the words you used earlier, a universal license or a universal background check perhaps, and insurance for everyone. Would you be in favor of that?
Well, I think obviously the universal background checks, we've mentioned that. That's definitely something that Moms Demand Action as an organization would be behind. And if there were research and evidence to support that licensing and insuring guns would in fact reduce everyday gun violence, I think that might be something that the organization would get behind. And one thing I think he said was that they don't get their guns taken away. Well, that's not true anymore in Florida. One part of the Stoneman Douglas law that went into effect was that we now have a red flag law in Florida. And the red flag law allows law enforcement to confiscate firearms from people who have been deemed a danger to themselves and others. And I think it's been over 500 guns have been confiscated so far. And this law is not a year old yet. So, and those were for people that may have injured themselves, may have injured somebody else. So there are some things that we're getting in place. We would love to see red flag laws at the federal level. That would be wonderful. But there are some little steps that we're taking to get a little bit closer to that.
I'm going to admit that I didn't prepare perfectly for this show in the event of any question coming up, because that reminds me of, I remember a story, now I can't remember exactly which one it was, where there was a shooting and the person who did the shooting had gotten their guns back after they had been taken away. And could that be Parkland? I'm trying to remember now, and now I'm just embarrassing myself, but I do remember hearing about where the shooter or the alleged shooter had their guns taken away, and then they were given back, and then they committed the crime with the gun. 813-239-9663. So if you have anything to add, another thing that failed in last year's legislative session is a bill requiring the state to approve concealed weapons permits in 90 days, regardless of whether background check was completed. And I believe this was before the Tampa Bay Times investigation came out. That failed. And what's your thoughts on that bill failing and why you would have not liked, I'm assuming you didn't like it, and why you would have opposed it?
It's kind of ridiculous. Why should, if they've waited 90 days and the background check hasn't gone through, the background check hasn't gone through. There's some, you know, something has to be, it has to be completed. If it's not, then that person isn't able to have their gun. I don't understand why that would be a point of contention. Mm-hmm. As a gun owner, can you think of, I guess, is it they shouldn't have to wait that long?
I agree with you 100%.
I'm not sure what
it needs to be completed. As a gun owner, I can't imagine why, but I would think if it's not completed in 90 days, there might be a problem. So maybe we need to take the additional time to get this taken care of.
Now, as someone who supports the Second Amendment, right, you support the Second Amendment because you're a gun owner and, you know, it's part of the U.S. Constitution. Would that be a violation of your Second Amendment rights to maybe have be on a list of people who are applying for a concealed carry permit, and that might make you nervous to have your government in charge of, you know, knowing that you want a gun and maybe thinking, well, why do you want a gun?
I'm a responsible, law-abiding gun owner, as I think most gun owners are. I don't have a problem with my name being out there or passing a security check or a criminal background check. It's not going to be an issue for me. But for those people who it is an issue for, I can imagine that they might be concerned. I get that. That's their problem.
Yeah, if you have something to hide, I can see why it might be troublesome. Otherwise, I don't know why it would be.
Right.
813-239-9663 is the number to call. I believe we still have one open line. I'm going to go to the phones in a second. I want to tell people that you're listening to WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. You may also be listening to WMNF.org or the WMNF app. Our guests are Aaron Wiley and Melissa Ransdell with the Moms Demand Action Group. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday on 88.5. And I was about to put Jackie on, and then she dropped off. So, Jackie, call back if you still want to go on the air. We have Jack in Tampa. Hi, Jack.
Hi, yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to talk about guns that carry permits on campuses.
Yes, please.
Yes, I was wondering if anyone on your panel would be opposed. When I went to Gasparilla, I saw a lot of National Guard people at the children's parade, you know, walking next to floats, and they were all brandishing their sidearms. They all had 45s or whatever. And I was wondering if, say, for instance, somebody was in advanced ROTC, which would be their junior and senior year of college, about to make a commitment to the military, or a National Guard's member, if the dean approved it, would they have a problem with those people being appointed to carry weapons on behalf of the school?
Can I ask you a question, because I'm confused by your question. Are you talking about someone carrying a concealed weapon, or are you talking about something that is part of the ROTC?
It would be in a holster. From what I understand, the concealed weapons means that you still have to wear the weapon visibly. You can't hide it on your body, you know, like you would.
I think that's not true. I'm pretty sure you can't let it. I'm pretty sure that if you have a concealed carry permit, no one must be able to tell that you have a weapon. It has to be completely concealed. I don't even think you can show a visible bulge, like if it's clear.
Yeah, brandishing your weapon is not allowed.
Well, then I would go the opposite direction. I would say as long as the dean approved it and those people were considered a part of the campus security, for instance, that they would carry a sidearm the same way as a policeman.
I think we would be against that. We are all for trained law enforcement, keeping us all safe at parades or any other campus event, just as has always been the case. Anybody else carrying weapons on a campus, we are against.
All right. Thank you for that question, Jack. Thanks so much. Let's try John in Newport Richey. I wish a woman would call. 813-239-9663. John in Newport Richey, what's on your mind?
I have a problem with we can carry concealed weapons, but why is it now if you have a drug card or a marijuana card, you cannot have a firearm permit? I want to hear what they say about that. Is it really reasonable? Because if that case, why, when people get DUIs, should they not have to give up their guns?
All right, that's a good question. I'm turning your volume down because there's a lot of background noise. Maybe you're driving or something, but that's interesting. So something that's completely legal in Florida, which is being a person who is prescribed medical marijuana, you've lost your right for a concealed carry permit.
Right. That is actually the law right now, that you can't have a medical marijuana card and a concealed carry permit. That's not something that Moms Demand Action has taken a stance on yet, but I'll be interested to see what research, you know, we come up with and what kind of stances we may take on it in the future.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting, I'm going to editorialize a little bit. It sounds like the people who crafted that provision of the law were trying to restrict gun ownership, and they've decided that one group that they could restrict gun ownership to would be, these people who need medical marijuana. So it seems a little, it does seem a little random, I guess, if you don't mind me editorializing that way.
Yeah, on a personal level, I think that it's silly.
This is the first I've heard of it. I feign ignorance. This is not something I'm familiar with, but I would like to read more on it actually now. Mm-hmm.
John, thanks for that question. 813-239-9663. If you'd like to join the conversation and be on 88.5 FM WMNF.org, we have a couple of guests from Moms Demand Action. And let's go to Valrico. Maya, you're on the phone. What would you like to say?
Hi. I'm calling. I'm wanted to just kind of expound a little bit on the gentleman that was talking about the National Guard. I have always been of a mind that we have incredibly courageous, well-trained, and capable individuals that are coming out of the military and having a very extreme, difficult time readjusting to civilian life and such, and it seems to me like we could focus that purpose, their purpose, on what they've been doing, which is protecting our rights and our civilians, and put them in the jobs of the school, security officers. They're trained, they know what they're doing, and, I think it would be a perfect fit for not only them coming home and now having a continued purpose of protecting our individuals here in the United States, but also putting them to work at something that they're good at.
Maya, before we go to our guests to respond, let me ask something, a clarification. When you say school security, are you talking about, for example, public high schools, or are you back to college campuses?
I'm talking about schools across the board. I'm talking about elementary schools. I'm talking about high school, middle schools, high schools. These individuals are already well trained. That's what they do. That's what they that's what they've been trained to do. And it's a purpose that they're all very proud of and take very seriously. And I would much rather see somebody in that capacity and that has that type of training in a elementary school or any school for that matter, universities included, versus some teacher that just says, okay, I'm going to take this into my own hands and get, a five-hour training at the local gun range.
All right. Thank you, Maya. Thank you for that. And that's going to transition us then to, I'll let you respond in just a second, but I'm going to let people know that we'll be talking more about what the Florida legislature calls the Guardian program. And that's where, for decades now, we've had some schools, like big high schools, have had police officers in the school. And then the Florida legislature last spring or late winter passed the Guardian program, in which school employees can now be trained and bring their guns and protect the school, I guess, with their guns if need be. And that's the Guardian program. So maybe, Aaron, do you mind just telling people a little bit more about the Guardian program, your thoughts about it, and how it's worked out so far?
Well, the Guardian program does allow school staff, but it has to be approved by the school board. So that goes school board by school board. They decide whether or not they're going to allow guardians in their school district. And here in Hillsborough County, they have not allowed guardians, which I'm glad for. I don't want another person with a gun inside of my kid's school. But to the caller, I just wanted to address real quickly, there are there are some security companies that work with schools already that do, in fact, hire retired military or retired law enforcement to fill those positions. So that's something that's already being done. As far as the Guardian program's effectiveness in Florida, I don't think we've had a chance to really try it out, which is a good thing. But I, for one, am not in favor of whether they be armed school teachers or anyone else in my children. I have elementary school kids. My eldest is going to middle school next year. And I'm not in favor of the idea of having someone there with a gun, and certainly not a teacher. And I think the caller brought this up as well, that teachers have, you know, other things to be focusing on other than wielding a weapon that could potentially, you know, injure somebody unintentionally, that children could get their hands on. And this could happen with other armed staff as well. That's another part of my concern. You know, kids are inquisitive and they will do just about anything to get their hands on what they want. And I don't want that to be a gun in their school.
And just to be clear, as of right now, someone who's only a teacher is ineligible to be a guardian. You have to be an administrator or a coach or a part-time teacher and part-time coach or something like that.
Right. Your full-time job cannot be instructional.
And for readers of the Tampa Bay Times, the last 2 days, they've had a series, what looks like it's going to be the beginning of a series about the problems in the Guardian program. Let me just run through a couple of the issues that the Times has pointed out. There are counties that are requesting funds for what's called the Guardian program, where the state lawmakers budgeted $9.4 million to the program as part of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School Public Safety Act. And more than 20 counties opted to use Guardians and filed budget requests for things like salaries, weapons, and training supplies. But the Times reports that Pinellas and Polk County requested about $1.5 million each. In Polk's case, about a third of the money was for charter schools. Hillsborough requested nearly $1 million. There were some odd requests in the state as well. Volusia County asked for $50,000 for things like baseball caps, windbreakers, polo shirts, as well as security supplies. Brevard County requested and received more than $800,000 for a second virtual reality training simulator. The Jacksonville Sheriff's Office requested $141,000 for psychological exams and polygraph services, a total of more than $13,000 per guardian. So that's some of the problems with the Guardian program that the Times is outlining so far. Your thoughts about the Guardian program? Do you like the idea of someone who is not a police officer carrying a gun in your child's school? 813-239-9663. Anything more to add about the Guardian program right now?
Well, I think something that you just were talking about, the financial aspect, is something that a lot of people don't think about. How are you going to fund this? You know, we can't get the kids updated textbooks, but you can afford to pay somebody and buy their guns and pay for their training and the psychological help they may need later as a result of having to use that weapon in a school full of children. You know, the financial aspect is something that we should think about as well.
You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. That was Aaron Wiley with Moms Demand Action. We also have Melissa Ransdell here. The number to call in is 813-239-9663. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. It's 12:53 in the afternoon. We've got about 8 minutes left. Let's hear from Steve in Tampa. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I'm great.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Okay, Steve is, I'm going to pause, I'm going to put him on hold. He can't hear us. Maybe take your off speaker or something, I'm not sure what. But let's go to Rick in Fort Myers. Hi, Rick.
Hi, my name's Rick. I've had my concealed weapons permit for about 40 years. I grew up in California, and I carry my gun everywhere I go, unless it's someplace I cannot carry it. I've tried to protect my family and friends. I've only had to pull it once to protect the neighbor. I feel that the Guardian program, if it's done right, people who wish to carry shouldn't get any extra money for it. It's just a privilege to be able to carry a concealed weapon, I feel, to protect our neighbors and friends and our nations and our cities and our kids. And if school shootings keep on happening, we're going to have to do something. And if you lost a kid in a school shooting, you'd be trying to figure out what it would take. And I would say it. More armed people there. It's just like having a house. If you have a house and you say there's no guns here on the front lawn, you're more likely to get robbed. than if you have a house that's unprotected. That's just the way I feel. Have a good day.
Just to comment to the caller, I think the reason I got involved was because I had to put myself in those parents' positions, the Parkland parents' positions. What if that was my child? Just kind of like he mentioned. And then each of us needs to decide what we need to do to, you know, try to be part of the solution with that. It's easy to say, I can't imagine. But what you really have to do is say, I need to imagine. I need to think, what if that was my child? Would I want to do something different? Would I want the laws to change? And Moms Demand feels that passing comprehensive gun safety laws that can prevent people before they ever get a hold of a gun is the right way to go here. So those are, you know, many of the laws that we're working toward. Preventing people with dangerous histories from getting a weapon in the first place instead of putting more guns in more places.
And I think when you hear from a lot of the parents who are the survivors of these tragedies, who have lost their children there, I was with Manuel and Patricia Oliver, who were Joaquin Oliver's parents. He was murdered at Parkland. I was with them this weekend. We were on a talkback panel for a play about Columbine, actually. And I think you'll find that most of the parents, like the Olivers, are speaking up against bringing more guns into the school. And I think, like Melissa said, when you imagine being in their shoes, and then when you hear from them, you don't have to imagine. They're telling you that that is not going to make it better for them. So, you know, there's certainly a place for concealed weapons when people are using them for home, you know, home protection, and maybe some people are hunters and they take their guns out there. I wouldn't think that there's ever a reason that I could foresee in any time in the future of kind of removing guns from all situations. There's places where people feel they're appropriate and they want to have them, and just schools are just not one of those in our opinion.
If you'd like to join this conversation, 813-239-9663. Thanks so much for that call, Rick. I appreciate that. Let's go to Steve in Tampa. Can you hear us now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
All right, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. The one thing that I'm wondering is, could we not start training our children at a young age how to handle weapons and what, you know, what the destruction that can be done with weapons and things like that to maybe deter maybe a few kids from grabbing a weapon just because, oh, hey, here's a gun and I want to look see what it's like. Well, that's not, if you haven't been trained or you've shown them something at an early age, they may not be as curious about that.
Let's see what our guests have to say about that. Thanks for the call, Steve.
I do think it's important to train kids. If you're at home or if you are a gun owner, absolutely. We advocate as Moms Demand Action. We have a program called Be Smart, and it teaches gun owners to be responsible, and it's all about responsible gun ownership. I grew up in Indiana, and we had, believe it or not, gun safety education in the sixth grade. It was required for everyone. It's a very much a hunting area, Indiana, as I grew up in a hunting home. So I am absolutely all for educating our kids, role modeling and modeling responsible gun ownership. Never point a gun at someone. It should be locked away, stored unloaded, and not accessible to children. These unintentional shootings that are happening, which I feel like we read about in the paper daily now, are really preventable. These are preventable tragedies that don't need to happen. So I'm absolutely 100% for teaching respect and responsible gun ownership, responsible storage. It just goes on and on. The onus is on the adult, not the child. So, you know, absolutely, I agree with him on that.
Now, I'm not sure if part of what he was talking about was, since we were talking about schools and guardians program, is going into a public school and teaching, you know, showing every kid, here's how you handle this gun and so forth. That might have, let's assume that's maybe one thing he was talking about. Should that be happening in our public schools? Either of you?
It's not something that I would personally support. And if there wasn't evidence to back it up, you can bet Moms to Be in Action wouldn't be doing that either. But I think that, as Melissa said with her upbringing, that's something parents in the home, if you choose to be gun owners, then, you know, the onus is on you to teach your children and model that responsible behavior. And you can actually read a lot more about the Be Smart program at besmartforkids.org.
Aaron, when is your next meeting, and when is the lobby day up in Tallahassee?
Okay, so our next meeting is this Wednesday. It's at the West Tampa Library. It is at 6:30 p.m. All are welcome. Please come and join us. We'll be talking about the Martin Luther King Day Parade that we'll be walking in and prepping for Advocacy Day. That Advocacy Day is February 6th. And if you'd like some more details, all you have to do is send a quick email to momsdemandtampa@gmail.com. And that will get you all of the details that you need to RSVP and jump on the bus with us from Tampa. Go up to talk to our lawmakers.
Well, thanks so much for coming in on WMNF's Midpoint. Aaron and Melissa, thank you.
Thank you.
Aaron Wiley and Melissa Ransdell are volunteers with Moms Demand Action. I want to thank everyone who called, emailed, and texted today. Pete and Mike, sorry I couldn't get to you. If you want to leave me a voicemail with your thoughts, give me a call at 813-238-8001, extension 114. I'll play your message the week after MLK Day. You can also join the conversation online at WMNF.org/news, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at WMNF News. I want to thank our engineer Alvaro Montealegre and phone answerer Frank Knox. I'm Sean Canaan, the host of WMNF News Midpoint Monday. Tomorrow at noon, your hero Mark Bureau will host Midpoint Tuesday. Stay tuned now for John Gilmore, an executive session coming up after NPR headlines on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, Lakeland. Thanks for listening.